Hey everybody, welcome back to Bikes and Big Ideas on the Blister Podcast Network. I'm David Golay, the bike editor at Blister and host of the show, and you can check out everything we're doing and reviewing over at blisterreview.com. All right, for this week's show, I am joined by Dakota Norton, who, among a lot of other things that we get into, has just changed teams to join the newly formed Mondraker Factory Racing alongside recent Bikes and Big Ideas guest Ronan Dunn. And between that and the fact that DH racing season is getting fired up here, it was a good time to chat with Dakota and get the rundown on his 2023 season, the move from the now dissolved Intense Factory Racing to Mondraker, but maybe even most importantly, the general state of DH racing both in the US and abroad, and get Dakota's perspective on how the U.S. in particular could better develop up-and-coming DH talent, how the racing scene in the country here has changed, and where things are headed. So there's a lot in here about the state of DH racing in particular, but also just some good perspective from Dakota on his season and finding consistency as a racer and a whole lot more. So it's a fun one. Hope you enjoy it. And with that, let's get right to my conversation with Dakota Norton. Well, Dakota, great to sit down and chat. How are you doing and where are you at right now?
Yeah, so I am in Lisa, Portugal. We shot over here for a couple days of testing on the old World Cup track, and then we're going to go to Ponte Lima tomorrow and do a few more days of testing. Just kind of a short trip. We had some new parts to try and some odds and ends, suspension odds and ends we wanted to work on. So shot over here and do a few runs with a small crew. We don't have the whole team here this time. It's just me and the engineers trying to get to the bottom of some stuff quickly and a little bit more attention to detail. So it's pretty exciting.
Right on. And I mean, a lot to dive into here about your move to the Mondraker team and last race season and a bunch more. But I guess since we're kind of on the subject, I mean, getting up to speed on the new bike and feeling good. How long have you been getting on it, and how's everything going on that front?
Yeah, I'm probably right now, I'd say I've done 100 to 150 runs on the bike. Not too crazy deep into it at this point. I think it'll ramp up a lot over this week, next week, and then we'll get to the Tennessee National, and then dive in the month of April. Hopefully we'll get maybe 200 more runs and kind of get in a good place. It's hard to say, you know, how long you've rode the bike and things like that, but I'd say we're probably 150 run range, and for the most part just like getting the chassis in a good place, getting the rider fit in a good place, and then working on suspension baseline, trying to find a base setting, and tweaking a little bit. I mean, it's a constantly evolving ecosystem, so every change you make has an effect. And just playing with some things, trying to get in a comfy place so that you can kind of just stand there and let the bike do its thing.
Yeah, I mean, good to hear you've gotten a solid chunk of time in anyway, and obviously keep chipping away at things. You know, obviously you had seems like, at least from my end, a pretty damn successful last race season, and then made the team move to Mondraker from Intense after, well, Intense Factory Racing folded. So I guess, was there anything in particular last year that felt like it just really started to click for you, or has it kind of, you know, wasn't like you were getting your first podiums last year either, you know, you've been up there for a good while now. But did anything kind of come together last year that felt like it hadn't consolidated quite as well before, or just slowly chipping away at things and getting yourself further up toward the pointy end of things? How did that feel? And I guess, what was your perspective on the overall success of last season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we look at the success of last season because I was really fast at the end of the season, right? Anytime you're able to crash and nearly get a World Cup podium, you're obviously riding fast, if not debatably one of the fastest guys. I was able to do good mid-season, but for the what I would call the first half of the season was like very close to failure for me. And I think just like being at the bottom of the barrel in terms of how I thought things were going to go and how things were going was, you know, sometimes you just get to the point where you're like, well, it can't get any worse, so I'm just going to let it rip. And that's kind of what it was. It was just being able to put down the things that weren't going right, put them behind me, and then focus on what I could do to go forward. And when it's all falling apart, it's pretty easy to just let the cards roll and or let the dice roll, whatever you want to call it, and just go race and race for fun. And yeah, mentally I was in a really good place, and I think that's kind of where I'm carrying into the Mondraker team, is just being able to accept that it's going to be what it's going to be. I'm going to give my best effort, and yeah, we're just going to go race, and whatever that is, like, you know, there's always going to be things that go awry and things you can't control and unforeseens, and that is what makes racing so special, is because it's hard. I mean, even if you have everything, that doesn't guarantee you're going to win. So yeah, just being in a point where I was just kind of okay with just being okay. It was what it was. I couldn't do anything about it. It went exactly how I didn't want it to go. And yeah, it was just being able to live with that, being able to accept that, and then moving forward.
Yeah. So I guess what was the mean? You know, results wise, like your second place in France, Ludenville, would be kind of the like obvious turnaround results wise. But was there a point after, you know, the results that I'm sure were not what you're hoping for in the couple of races leading into that, that you kind of felt like things were getting back on track? Or was it just that actually getting that second place that was like, okay, I'm back in the groove, like we're on it again? Or what would you say turned the season around on that front then, if you were, you know, as you said, kind of viewed the first chunk of it as bordering on failure and then finished pretty damn strong?
Getting in the starting gate and just going, whatever, like, I'm gonna go for it. I want to win. I'm sick of riding around, worrying about what if, worrying about my World Cup overall, worrying about the points. Like, I just got in the gate and said, yeah, well, you know, for lack of better terms, like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I don't care. And I'm going to just race, and I'm going to ride as fast as I can, and I'm going to go for it, because that's what I truly want to do. So more than it being the position on the results list, it was accepting that I was ready to go, like ready to do it, ready to ride fast, ready to ride fearless, ready to ride in a place where I hadn't been before, and a mindset that I hadn't been in. And it's like, it's all good, you know? I mean, at this point in time in my career, it's like, okay, one career podium, two career podiums, bouncing around from team to team, trying to find a solid home, trying to find a good support system around me. And it's like, at some point, you just have to accept that if it all goes to shit, you're good. Like, I'll go ride my dirt bike. I'll hang out with my friends at home. I'm good. Like, I like doing what I'm doing at home. If I'm renoing houses, if I'm running a lawn care company, if I'm doing concrete work, I'm good. I'm happy. I've achieved what I wanted to achieve here. And I'm doing myself a disservice if I don't try to be my greatest self. So I guess that realization is just, it's not the position, it's to be able to feel free of like fear of failure, feel free of what if, for the most part for me.
That's really interesting. And I guess, you know, the mental aspect of racing DH is obviously a very tough one. You've got to sort of balance being close to the ragged edge without, you know, stepping over. You still got to finish the damn run, but you know, in order to be at the pointy end, you still need to be able to just kind of let go at some point too, and knowing how to walk that line is tough. And would you say that earlier in the season you were being a little cautious and trying to a little bit too much to avoid the crash, avoid the really bad result, and in doing that just weren't putting forth your best foot because you weren't pushing quite hard enough? Or how would you characterize that? I'm kind of trying to tease out that part of it.
That's a difficult one, because it's, you're riding the line without crossing it. You know, I can go to Windrock and or wherever, I can do 10 runs within the second, and to go 2 seconds faster, you have to risk your life and understand that it's not good. Like, I'm really good at riding at 95 to 97% all day long. I can do it run in and run out. But when you're talking about finding, when you're already on the limit, finding 2 seconds is very difficult. And a lot of it is having like the team around you to have the best line on the track, or have the best bike set up and get every click right on the suspension and have everything working for you. And then maybe having good conditions, good wind, good whatever, you know, having luck, we'll call it luck on your side, whether that exists or not, I don't really know. But in that run at Loudonville, I almost won the race. I had the biggest mistake I've had in a World Cup in forever. Just almost blew off the track. And before that, it was just like riding. I knew I was fast. And like, I think I got to show that speed at the end of the year, but knowing how fast I was and then just having it, just not having the cards fall in my way. Like, you know, I underestimated some rebound settings at Val d'Isol and didn't make it out of the semi because I made a mistake. It's completely my fault. Hit something rear wheel off the ground, couldn't brake, and blew it. And that was like devastating for me. And, you know, early in the season, we had other issues. You know, I slid out. I didn't ride as well as I could. Maybe had a bit of a realization that my bike was a bit too small. You know, just all kinds of different learning lessons. And I took some gambles, and we made it happen. But it was really frustrating to have that speed and not be able to show it. And that was really mentally difficult for me. So, yeah, I was just able to, when all was going to shit, just hold the throttle wide open and be okay with what it was going to be. I was just like, man, I trained so hard. I worked so hard. I'm not here to ride like this or be in this situation. So yeah, just putting my head down.
That's a good note about that Loudonville race too, because, you know, on paper, second place looks awesome. But yeah, the fact that it was second with a big mistake that, you know, it was real damn close to being a win. How did that feel at the time? Was it still exciting and felt good to be standing on that podium, or was it more just like, ah, shit, I was so close?
Maybe it was, you know, I knew it was a good run, but I made huge mistakes. I figured it was a 10th. With the mistakes I made, I figured it was a 10th. And then it was like, oh, well, I might get 7th. And it was like, wow, that was a podium. Okay, that's insane. I can't believe that happened. And then it was like, I could win this race. And after the fact, it was definitely, there's always that thought in your head of, oh yeah, like I could have won that race if I didn't make that one mistake. But you know, I could say that about Lenzerheide in the year prior. I could say that about a lot of races. There's a lot of races I almost won, you know?
But it's also probably the case that there are 3 other guys there who, like, if they hadn't made the mistake that they made, you know,
that's racing
in that same boat, right? It's like, exactly. Yeah. I mean, most people are going to make a mistake somewhere in their run, you know? And so it's, yeah, I think it's easy to kind of second guess and what if it, but you're not the only person having those what ifs.
Oh, for sure not. And you never will be. I mean, there's plenty of people that can say, yeah, I would have won if. There's 7 of those people at every race, and that is the game. It's like, how close can you get without throwing it away?
Yeah. And a little while back in there too, you touched on the fact that you've been moving around teams a bit, and has it, as you put it, trying to find a home somewhere settled, and has it felt hard just having kind of the changing landscape and being on different teams and needing to figure out different bikes and so on and so forth with some regularity? Do you think a bit more consistency would be helpful there?
Yeah, dude. I wish I could come into the season knowing every clicker I wanted to run on my bike and, you know, having everything dialed in, but that's just not the reality of the situation, you know? Part of being great is being able to quickly work through your problems and be able to compartmentalize things you can control, things you can't control. You know, I mean, I'm sure every dude at the World Cup would like to have the best part, every one of the best parts on his bike, but the reality is that's not going to happen. I mean, you have good packages and you do the best you can with what you have. You're paid to do a job and ride a bike and develop that bike and put it on the podium. And that's why there's so many jobs, is because, you know, there are, you know, maybe not so many jobs, but there are different jobs. I mean, if there was just one best bike and one best guy, you know, he would win every time. But everyone is, like, you know, going through a set of, you know, variables they're working through. And that's what makes it so challenging, but that's also what makes it so fun. You know, it's, I think it's kind of like F1, you know, it's cool when, you know, there's definitely some dudes at the front that are really good and, they're in really good cars and on really good programs and they're fighting for the wins. And then maybe down the list, there's dudes that maybe aren't in as good of a car that when they do, or they're a privateer or they have different challenges, that they don't have what all the top guys have. But when they put in a spectacular ride, it's really cool and it's appreciated. And that's, you know, working through those challenges is how you get in one of those main seats and on a really good program. And the only way out is through the top of the results list. And the only way to make your problems go away is, you know, go as fast as possible. And it's what makes it cool. It's what makes all the challenge. There's a reward. There is a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And then at the same token, if you are the dude, you know, now I have a seat on a great team and I'm on a good bike. And there's always going to be somebody trying to take your job. So you got to stay there and you got to fight, and it is a fight, and that's what makes it so challenging, but that's what makes it so fun.
And I guess along those lines, when over the course of the season did you find out that Intense wasn't coming back with the factory team and that you were looking for a new ride somewhere else? And how much did, because that, you know, typically at least those conversations are all kind of happening during the season.
And yeah.
How much does having that hanging over your head sort of impact your focus on what's going on and just all that kind of stuff? How did that go?
Yeah, it's not fun at all. I learned midway through the season, and it's like, I mean, of course, if you're doing your job and you're doing your job well, you're gonna have opportunities. But obviously with the state of the sport at the moment, things are a little tight for the bike companies. Like, I think it's no secret that there is some challenge within the bike industry at the moment. And yeah, who knows if there's going to be a seat, and that is scary. And then you're trying to ride at the limit with your, well, like, you know, everything on the line, like you're riding for your life, as you know it, which is, I mean, that sounds dramatic, but it is the reality. Like, if you don't, the next year, you're not going to be racing if you don't get a ride. And if you continue to blow it, you're not going to get a ride, or you might sacrifice the ride. You might not get the ride you want or what you've been working for. So, it makes it twice as hard in my personal opinion. Like, it'd be really cool to have an insurance policy and just cruise down the track and know it's going to be okay. But, that doesn't really build character, the same. So I think it's that grit, in that being able to mentally perform is pretty cool when you can do it. It builds a lot of character.
As you touched on, it is, well, yeah, not a secret that the bike industry is going through some challenging times at the moment. How does that feel from the perspective of, you know, the guys in the pits and going through last season, knowing that you, for the latter half of it, knowing you needed to find yourself a new ride for this year? And does it feel like things have contracted substantially on that end, or has the, you know, availability of rides for guys at the top end still feeling pretty stable for the time being? Or I don't know, you tell me.
If nobody has any money, they're not going to want to pay a lot of it to somebody. And it takes a lot to be at the top. Not a lot in terms of, like, I mean, we're not talking about other professional sports. But the reality is it's not cheap to fly around the world and race your bike and, you know, have mechanics sitting in the pits and, you know, pay for hotels and, you know, all the things that it takes to race. So even if we're not talking about, like, salaries, I mean, adding a rider to your roster costs a lot of money. Going from a 2-rider team to a 3-rider team is substantially more. You know, it's another staff. It might be another crew member. It might be, it's another hotel room at every race, another mouth eating, you know? So it is, and if you're at the top of the sport, it's another salary because it's expensive. So we still have to pay trainers and coaches and, you know, live. So yeah, it's not easy doing the walk around and asking for a job in challenging times it's not fun, but it's definitely easy. It gets a lot easier if you're going fast and you have value, for sure. It's definitely harder to do that walk around. Nobody really cares about your problems, you know? They just, either you're getting the job done or you're not. So it makes it easier when you are getting the job done.
Yeah. And would love to have you peel back the curtain a little bit of your game. You know, you talk about that walk around. What does that process actually look like?
Just applying for a job, just like everybody else. Are you hiring? And if you are, you know, I mean, that's just the most part. Like, if you've been racing for a significant amount of time and you have relationships, it definitely gets easier. And there are people that help with that process. And having a manager definitely helps me. But I mean, hey, I'm looking. If you're hiring, I'm looking. And that is, you know, kind of how that starts. It's just applying for a job. It's not like it's posted on the internet anywhere. You got to walk in and, hey, I think I'm going to be looking for a job next year. Do you have any availability? And that's about as easy as you know, it kind of starts. So, the industry's small, man. If you want to operate with integrity and be a good person, and, makes your life easier.
No, that makes sense. And I guess kind of along some of the same state of the sport lines, just how has the changes to broadcasting and organization and all that kind of stuff felt from your end? You know, people have been a little bit up in arms about the way races have been broadcast and stuff. What does it feel like from the other side of the camera?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of changes, and the state of the sport is different from an event perspective. I mean, it's still downhill racing for me. We still do a few practice run and we race a few times and we race for points and try to win. I mean, that's about as simple as it can get. And now we do there's one more cut, and it makes it a little harder, but it's just, you know, it's still just as challenging as it was, and people may be a little worked up, but I just think that, you know, the things were really good for a while. It's really exciting to have all those new people in the sport, and the bike companies made a ton of money. And I do believe, through the COVID times, because there were not many bicycles to buy. So I can only assume that the bike companies did well. And, if everybody has a new bike, they're probably not going to look for another one. So, it's just a little change where they're not selling bikes, maybe like they were, through the COVID times, and, you know, how companies manage that is business, and, you know, businesses will succeed and businesses will prevail or succeed and, fail, just like riders. You know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and, sometimes you make decisions that are good, and sometimes you look back and say, wow, that wasn't so great. And everybody tried to manage that COVID time differently. And just like anything, it's just business, you know? So if bikes aren't selling, it's hard for teams to expand when they just did all of their expansion with an influx of capital. So one would only assume that's not common knowledge that things did well during the COVID time. So I don't think I'm overstepping by saying that, but, you know, it's just walking that line, and, it is what it is. There will be good times and there will be bad times, and through the bad times, some people get made stronger, and sometimes things thin out, and that's when you learn.
Yeah, I mean, kind of by definition, it can't all be boom times, I guess, right?
Nope. But,
I mean, if you were kind of in charge of the organization of World Cup downhill racing, you know, how the bike companies are doing is one thing, but how the sport is being run and organized and broadcast and all that stuff is a somewhat different piece of the puzzle, right? What would you want to do of just in terms of figuring out how to run races and make the whole circus go if you were in charge of it?
Oh, that's a difficult one. Man, there's a reason I'm a bike racer, not an event promoter. But I would just, you know, I think I would like to continue to see a system to get up and coming riders. Like my teammate Ronan, he came in straight into the sport and did some pretty amazing things with a high number board. I was 120th place guy that turned into a 30th place guy that turned into a podium contender. And I came through, it would be really hard for me to come through without them taking 80 riders. So I don't really care how they have to make it happen. I would like to continue to see riders be able to enter the sport at a world level, especially with the feeder series not being as strong as it should be in America or around the world. I mean, I think the IXS Cups do well, and it's hard to make that jump. And without being able to be there and get experience, you wouldn't have me on the results list, or a lot of other dudes. So it is cool that they are trying to make superheroes of our sport, but I think that there's balance, and I think balance is one of the hardest things in life to maintain. And I think that it applies to World Cup racing as well, and the events. We need to find a way to have balance.
Yeah, that's been one of my big worries about all this too, is the just lack of a feeder series. And I've talked about this on here before. This isn't a new thought by any stretch. But yeah, I mean, you keep winnowing down the field, and pretty soon, you know, I don't know how you get your foot in the door unless you're like literally Jackson Goldstone and can just come and start winning elite races right out of the gate, right?
I mean, you got to win in America before you can win overseas. And if you're not a top American dude, you don't really have any business going to the World Cup. So I like that you have to qualify. I think that makes it going to a World Cup much more prestigious. But at the same time, we can't just have everybody and their brother out there. It is. I mean, even with two practices, the difference in speeds can sometimes be pretty dangerous, just because we're already going on the limit of being able to slow down. And if you put any moving obstacles out there as well, it doesn't get any easier. So I think that there is definitely a limit to it. But at the same time, like, you should have to qualify to race a World Cup. You should have to earn your points through a series and go in. But maybe going to 30 riders isn't the solution. We'll see.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely not arguing for it just being an open free-for-all, but I guess more what I meant is that it feels like if you're going to narrow the field at the World Cup level, you know, that is not necessarily inherently a bad thing in and of itself, but I think you need something to replace that. You know, if you're going to have a smaller field, then finding some way to have a better organized and better run sort of set of feeder series to have people have a way to work their way up that ladder feels important. And, you know, it varies a bit depending where you're at, but a lot of places that feeder series just isn't really where it needs to be. And it doesn't feel like the folks organizing at the top end, the World Cup organizers, are all that, I don't know, from my perspective, it seems like they're not that concerned with that problem and are just hoping that that void will get filled somehow. And it feels short-sighted to me, is my point, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
And, well, I mean, on that note, like, the state of downhill racing in the States is not what we might hope it would be, but it also seems like it's getting better in some ways. And, you know, downhill Southeast and that part of the country is kind of leading the charge there. So, from the perspective of growing American DH racing and having more grassroots local stuff and a better way to develop up and coming American racers, what would you want to see happen there?
I mean, yeah, the downhill Southeast is great. The I think the Monster Pro downhill series will be awesome. We have Big Mountain Downhill. There is the NW Cups, and also there's the Eastern States Cup. So we have a bunch of series. We have a bunch of one-off races, the Tennessee National. We have the U.S. Open is part of the Monster U.S. Downhill Series. But it would just not be nice to see. There's a lot of hands in the cookie jar at the point in time. And the Downhill Southeast was definitely created as a series for us to get ready. I would say the professionals in the in the Southeastern area to get ready for the World Cups. And it was always a preseason series. And I guess that is turning into more of the more elite series within our region and the East Coast at this point in time, which is, it's great. It's good to see. The BME or Big Mountain Downhill Series is predominantly in the middle of the summer, and it's definitely, to me, looks at not aimed at having World Cup riders there. And it seems like the Pro Downhill Series is trying to cater to that in some degree, which I would like to try to attend a couple of those races. And yeah, I think it would be great to see a full winter downhill series, like California, West Coast rounds in the winter and some East Coast rounds in the preseason, and a couple of rounds spaced around the World Cup series so we can race in America. And have a good downhill series where riders are able to see the gap between the top guys and where they're at, to know at what pace they need to be to even look at going to race a World Cup. So, yeah, the feeder series is starting to grow, which is cool to see. But I think that it would be nice to see a predominantly one national series at some point in time. And hopefully, if things go well with the Monster Downhill Series this season, we can see that shape into what was the pro or the GRT of the glory days.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that has just felt, to me at least, like it hasn't quite clicked here, is that you've had a number of different kind of regional series that have
blossomed,
come and gone, and yeah, had their moment in the sun and then, at least in some cases, faded back out over the years. And just feels like having a better kind of unified organization of these things, and rather than a kind of a patchwork of different regional series, would be cool, and kind of have it better organized and have it be, like you said, have just better coverage and better consistent scheduling to make it all fit together. And, you know, you look at like France, for example, and who just are really, you know, putting an incredible number of riders into the World Cup these days. And you have to go, huh, well, yeah, you look at their national organization of putting stuff together and think, man, Big Sur would be cool if we could figure out how to do that over here. But it's tough. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, the French Cups are great. It's a great series. The IXS Cups are great. It would be awesome. It's, you know, racing in America is, you know, most of the time, I think it comes down to the companies supporting the racing. I mean, it's expensive for us to go do these races. If, you know, it's expensive to fly to California, book a rental car, book a hotel, go race for, you know, 5 days and then fly home. It's, you know, it's pretty expensive. Even for me, you know, who does it for a living. And I think with the, how expensive things are, I don't think a lot of people have a lot of money to just, you know, fly across the country and then go break a bunch of bike parts that are really expensive while they're doing it. So it's cool to see these regional series is really blossom. And I think if the state of the sport is good and we're in a position where we can schedule the races at good times, where there's a good amount of support for the World Cup guys to go do them as a preseason feeder series to prepare for the World Cups, and it works so that it's economical, you know, for, I think once they started flying from one side of the country to the other back to back all the time, it got pretty expensive. And the days of like privateers loading up the vans and doing a road trip and, you know, going to the East Coast for 4 weeks to go race in the summer, those days, we don't see them too much anymore. Some of my best memories are, you know, going up to race the Spring National and then, you know, going to ride, you know, at the Highland Bike Park and then shooting up to the U.S. Open and then going up to Mount St. Anne and racing Wyndham back to back was awesome. And you can like justify doing that and you can get a lot of exposure out of one trip. But I just don't think that if they continue to race on the East Coast, then the West Coast, then there's a race over here. It's not feasible, especially with like how expensive things are and how expensive bike racing is. Man, it's hard to justify. And, you know, there are a lot of parents that are trying to back their junior X kids to try to make it and try to jump and be able to race the World Cups and be able to go over and race as juniors at the World Cups. But I think as long as we see more development programs like the Gravity Academy, and then, you know, the Outlaw Tribe does it, I think the Gravity Academy is awesome. Corey's doing a great job. And if we see more of these development programs where it can be a bit more hands off and the kids are taken care of to go race and they can load up the van and go race for a few weeks and dad can stay home at work and doesn't have to take a week off work and fly the whole family to the race, it might be a bit better. And I'm hoping we see that in the future.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly a very fair point about cost. And yeah, I mean, having a big national series would be prohibitively expensive to get to for a ton of folks. So yeah, I certainly don't pretend to have the answers here. I'm just
yeah. Spitballing.
Thinking out loud and spitballing.
It would be great to have more races. We need a way to prepare kids. And I think the biggest thing that starts is the tracks. Dude, it's not even on the same level. And it's tough. And I think that if we have a good series and, you know, there's going to be good competition and we have good development programs on good tracks, you build it and the people will come. A lot of the tracks are the same year after year and, the changes don't get really made and there's not great, in my personal opinion, there hasn't been great, feedback for a lot of the event promoters. People kind of just get criticized and there isn't like a good way to give feedback and work with the top dudes to try to cater the tracks to be as good as they can be for building riders to be successful overseas. You know, I think a lot of the races in America, they get so concerned. They want the race to have a specific time that they sacrifice the track. And the reality is a lot of these races are not going to be 3-minute downhill runs. And then they're going to be able to get a rider up to learn the things they need to learn to race down a World Cup track. It's just not going to happen. if you want the track to be as fast and as straight as what we race at a lot of the World Cup tracks, if you go to Colorado, they just can't run the track straight down the hill like that because of erosion issues. You know, they kind of have to stick to a certain grade for erosion. So it's just really, really interesting for me to, like, you know, I go to Windrock and I think it's so flat, and then hear how everybody comes there and they're like, it's so steep, we can't even ride down it. And for the average rider, it is steep, but it's definitely not steep like what we race overseas. The sustained grade is in the roughness of the tracks are just not there. So it'd be cool if we had a pretty solid track, even if the race was a bit shorter and a bit tighter times, just to build some good up and coming riders. If you look at the French Cups, the tracks are gnarly.
Yep. A lot of pieces that have to come together to make it all work. And, you know, seems like folks are trying, and bless them for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's cool to see Clay putting together that national downhill series. I really hope he can get that off the ground, and I hope to be able to support it.
For sure. Well, let's kind of look forward to the 2024 season a little bit here. Obviously, we touched on the move to Mondraker and working on getting up to speed on the new bike. Do you have any specific goals in mind for the season, or how do you approach a new one like this in terms of, you know, knowing when you feel like you're on your game, what goals you're setting for yourself, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, just try to get the bike in a good place. There's definitely going to be some learning involved once we get on the World Cup tracks, and then try to do our best to just keep my expectations reasonable, make small goals and try to improve. Just try to be in the mix, man. Not make the big mistakes that get me set back from a World Cup overall standpoint. I still do want to chase that World Cup overall as good as I can. And yeah, just plug away slowly but surely. Try to be in the mix, try to be in the top 10 there, and then try to fight for podiums. And that's kind of the only expectations I have. It's just kind of the first few World Cups. It's going to either be we're going to come out of it going we're in a good place, or it's going to be a fire drill, and we're going to have to make things happen quick and get the bike in a good spot. So see where we're at, and then go from there.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, kind of all you can ask for at some points, just to feel like you gave it your best shot, and sounds like you're well on the way there.
Yeah, just mentally. If I'm mentally in a good place, and I can just build some confidence and start plugging away. I mean, I'm not by any means trying to come into the season and light the world on fire. I don't feel like I really have anything to prove, but I feel like I have a lot to lose in terms of getting too excited. And you know, we're just going to see where we're at. And race by race, kind of just try to improve. That's the only thing I want to do, is constant small improvements and work my way up on the results list.
Yeah, fair enough. And well, looking forward to watching along and wishing you all the best this year, man. It's going to be cool to follow it, and excited for racing to get back going again. So not too much longer here. We're getting there. But really appreciate you coming on and chatting. This has been a lot of fun. And like I said, just good luck this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate it. It's fun to get to talk about kind of what I have going on. I wish I was in a place where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm trying to win the first race. But you know, as I get older and I get wiser, you know, I just I try to keep my goals reasonable, and then yeah, it's cool to get to talk about it. I really appreciate you giving me a chance to, you know, kind of talk about how last season went, the state of American downhill and the World Cups overall, and then, you know, get to talk a little bit more about, you know, what I want to see and how I think we can continue to grow the next generation. And yeah, I hope I can get to be a part of that more. So thanks for giving me a voice. I really appreciate it.
been great having you on and let you get back to it now. But thanks again. This has been great.
Cheers, mate.
All right. That's it for this edition of Bikes and Big Ideas. And as always, we would very much appreciate you leaving us a rating or review in your podcast player of choice to help keep the show going and growing. I'd also like to say thanks to Dakota for the conversation, thanks to Taylor Ahern for producing the episode, and thanks to you for listening. From all of us at Blister, please take good care of yourself, everybody else, and we'll be back again next week. Bye, everybody.